in the purple sky. Baby's sleeping while its mother sighs. Talking about the rich folks. Rich folks have the same jokes, and they park in basic places. The priest is preaching from a shallow grave. He counts his money, then he paints you safe. Talking to the young folks. Young folks share the same jokes, but they've beaten older places. So don't tell me about your success, nor your recipes for my happiness. Smoking bed, I never could digest those illusions you claim to have going. The sun.
That's folk singer and musician Sixto Rodriguez, the sixth child, hence his name, of Mexican immigrants who settled in Detroit, where Rodriguez still lives. His music about working class struggles and the offenses of the rich and powerful won him widespread fame and recognition abroad in the 1970s. In South Africa, in Zimbabwe, Botswana, New Zealand, and Australia, and other parts of the world, especially in Europe, but more so than in the United States. It was a shock to him that he was that famous, actually. He was the subject of an award-winning 2012 documentary, Searching for Sugar Man, about two devoted South African fans trying to find out if a rumor that he was dead was actually true. Of course, he is not. He's still very much around. And now he has adjusted to the idea that he's a very famous guy. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Tuesday, July the 15th. We'll be talking today about what's happening on the border, the famous border crisis. Well, sandbagged by yet another crisis that has put him and his administration on the defensive, President Obama has decided to take the tried and true approach to dealing with it. And how do you deal with it? Well, you throw obscene amounts of money at the problem. He's hardly likely to get from Republicans the $3.7 billion that he's asking from Congress to handle nonstop illegal entry into the United States, now by tens of thousands of unaccompanied children. But even if he gets the money, oh, he does not get the money, the president will be spending the money on effects of the problem, not on eradicating the problem itself. So we'll be talking about this famous border crisis and why there will be no real solution to it, certainly not on President Obama's watch, and why major players in this political drama have no interest in getting at its root causes. Well, first, let's start off with this idea that there is an immigration crisis. I'm going to talk about that. There is no immigration crisis because this is not about immigration. Are we witnessing an immigration problem? Or are we witnessing a mass movement of people from points south to the porous borders of the United States and trying to get through. Are we witnessing an immigration problem? I mean, this is the first thing we have to deal with, because that's the first piece of the propaganda, that this is an immigration problem. Therefore, we need to have immigration reform. The first thing is, this is not an immigration problem. This is about masses of people moving from one place to another, or feeling compelled to move one place to another. There's migrations of people. And a large number of these people now are children. There's something interesting about mass migrations of people, and that is the causes are usually really bad. It's not an orderly process. It does not look pretty. People are forced or feel compelled to move for their very survival, because wherever they are is so unsuitable to life itself that they have to just move. It's not like all these people just got up one morning and said, you know what, today is Tuesday, let's mass migrate for no reason. Let's just move, just take whatever we could carry on our backs and just wade through a river and find ourselves on a raft or on an inner tube sailing across one river or the other, put our children on rafts. If we can't accompany them, we just send them over and put them in the hands of people we don't know, with reputations that are highly questionable. We have no idea whether these children will make it or not, but it's what we have to do. This is not a pretty choice. So let's get out of our heads the idea that these are immigrants wanting to come to the country. Mass migrations are what we are seeing. And that immediately tells us that there is something out of order. Why? Because immigration is a very orderly process. To be an immigrant, you have to fill out forms, you got to pay fees, you have to take time to ponder your decision, you have to prove to the country that you're leaving that you're good to go, and that the country you're going to, that you're good enough to get there and good enough to be there. You have to show that you have some money squirreled away to take care of yourself and your needs. You're not going to be a burden. You have people who are going to sustain you if things should fall apart, that you have a system of support. It's a very orderly process. We are not looking at an orderly process. Therefore, this is not immigration. You got to go for interviews. People have to approve of you. You have to go through a ritual of movement. Mass migrations are spontaneous, instant responses to extreme situations. And if anybody wants to persuade me that all these children, who, of course, have parents, that their parents are also uniformly without any standards or consciences whatsoever, their parents think so little of them that they would just think nothing of casting their fate to the wind. If anybody wants to persuade me that that's what's going on here, then you really have to reexamine your own selves, because that couldn't possibly be a logical explanation. That has to come from some other dark place within you. So we're not seeing an orderly process. We're seeing this mass movement of people. Mass movements uniformly are are triggered by extreme situations. It may be war, it may be famine, it may be natural disasters, it may be oppression, it may be terrorism, it may be oppression, it may be any number of awful things. But uniformly, the experience of mass movements of people is that something awful is compelling them to do what they are doing. So if this is not immigration, then why is it constantly being discussed within the framework of immigration? That's a very simple question, and yet it is an extremely complex one. And we will talk about some of those reasons why this, although it is not an immigration problem, it is instead being marketed relentlessly as an immigration problem. For one thing, all parties, all the key players in this drama are of one mind, and that is, in the noble tradition of the United States, first you super simplify an issue. You make it really simple for people to understand. And that is what is at the crux of this huge propaganda machine. You know, they're pumping this idea. This is an immigration problem. No, it's not. But you treat it as such, you call it as such, therefore it is such. So anybody coming around saying, you know, this really isn't an immigration problem at all. It may be related, but it is not an immigration problem. We have a massive human rights dilemma here on our hands. This is not an immigration problem. Therefore, it should not be addressed within the context of immigration. The question we ought to be asking is, what is the causal relationship between these people deciding to leave and coming to the United States? And more appropriately, why the United States? Why are they choosing the United States? What, therefore, is the appropriate responsibility of the United States in this situation? Now, these questions are very inconvenient to ask and answer, because now you have to deal with real life. And this is political season, and it's midterm elections, and the Republicans and Democrats are scrapping with each other over who will dominate in the House and in the Senate, who will have a re-election capability and who will not. And who, if they win this time around, will they be well situated to go one step further in 2016? So we have deep political interests coloring the decision making of the United States right now. We have a population that has been buffeted by all kinds of calamity itself. The United States, Americans have gone through a steep downturn in the economy. This is a time when nationalistic fervor will rise above everything. People become extremely irrational and nativist. You may recall a conversation I had a year or so ago with someone who was very offended that I used that word to describe his thinking, nativist thinking, us and them. Even though the objective conditions may only be cosmetically different, one group of suffering people in the United States looking at another group of suffering people, the mentality still is to say, well, I'm suffering, but I'm American. And my suffering is better than your suffering. This is my country, not yours. I am not about to share anything with you. You're coming to take things from us and our children. That is the mentality that this propaganda has to thrive on. So it propagates it. It sells it. It merchandises it. Even though it says, well, you know, well, we are Americans, and therefore we must rise to a higher standard of behavior and conduct, and we ought to be far more generous, and we ought to be, you know, exemplary in our approach to this question. None of that is true. That's what they say, but that's not what they're committed to. Psychologically, the idea is that we have this, we talked about zero-sum thinking. This is my stuff. You can't have my stuff. And this is the kind of feeling that is being pumped into the minds of American citizens. We're seeing it where now people are being greeted as they cross the border with their children, or the children crossing themselves. They're being greeted with hostile busloads of people who are waiting for them to scream at them and to denounce them and to harass them. So you reduce this complex problem to a very simple idea. There are people coming in. They don't deserve to be here. We don't want them here. How do we get rid of them? It works because in this political season, as I said, people are waiting to score points, both for themselves, for their party, for their country, for whatever it is. But they will use this. This event is so useful to hidden political agendas, because they're going to use it to show great American largesse and the generosity of America. They're going to use it the Republicans are using it to beat the heck out of Barack Obama. How could you possibly have been surprised? Here's yet another crisis that you have, you know, you've caused by your incapacity, you and your administration, your incapacity to deal with things and to anticipate where things were going. You've been warned, but you fell down. You were asleep at the job. And now it's a crisis, which is a proof that you're incompetent. And that is a very legitimate observation. You're going to have the conversation taking us into, what therefore should we do? How do we treat this within our laws that we have been arguing about? So this gives the politicians the opportunity to revive a scuffle that they've been having for a long time that they haven't been able to resolve because they lack leadership on the question of immigration, period. Immigration. This gives them the opportunity to revive that scuffle because, again, it's political season. Anything that helps people improve their national stature, even if it is this kind of misery, they'll take the opportunity to do so. Why is it an immigration problem? Because at the root, Americans have deep-seated feelings about this notion of immigration and who deserves it and who does not deserve it. So this involves now, suddenly an apathetic America becomes extremely interested. Why? Because these people, if they are allowed to migrate to the United States the way they are in masses, it will screw up so many things. For one thing, they will be consuming resource that they're not entitled to. That's our stuff. They will be here picking up space that is our space. They will be here getting an American education. That's our education. And getting our jobs and living in our houses. And next thing you know, they'll be marrying out our children. And they'll take over. And we have to fight it now, because we are facing, both in terms of DNA, we're facing miscegenation, the onslaught of the brown folks. and our DNA will be diluted forever. And our place of dominance, we will be outnumbered. And we are therefore obliged to, quote, stand our ground, unquote. That's the mentality that they're feeding. And from the reactions, we see that they've made a very accurate calculation that these are the sentiments that Americans will have. So you put it in the context of this, these parameters of immigration reform, which is, I mean, a mess because people are not committed to it. The Congress isn't committed to immigration reform. President Obama isn't committed to immigration reform. They just need to talk like it and seem to be walking in that direction, but they're not interested in it. And there are reasons. What they want to do in the immediate situation, which is what the typical response is of the American legislative branch and the executive branch, is a quick fix that falls nicely within the political season and how people can use this situation to maximum political advantage. That's it. To manage the crisis for political advantage. That is the task. There's no intention here to really solve this problem. So the typical solution, we've seen the president make the move already to in that direction. The typical solution, you have a problem, just throw some more money at it. And that opens up new avenues to score political points. Well, we need more border guards. Hey, that's a jobs program. We need more judges. Hey, that's another jobs program. We need new facilities. That's a construction jobs program. We need new social workers. We need more of this. We need more of that. Just throw some money at it. And with a limited aspect of this problem, we can claim victory. We can demonstrate to the United States and to the world, we have solved a problem. We have thrown $3.7 billion at it. And look, we have more border guards. We have more guns on the border. We have more tanks. We have more law enforcement. We've got more of everything. And therefore, this solves the problem. Well, so the problem, as we should interpret it, is to be solved with more money, which is, in fact, a form of a jobs program. So what is the hesitancy here in really getting to it? These are not immigrants that the United States desires. These are not the kind of immigrants that Bill Gates and Zuckerberg and the tech people are fighting for. These are not the kinds of immigrants that would make America proud and make America work. Who wants these people? They're poor people. What could they possibly contribute to America other than poverty and misery? Why should they be desirable in our eyes? Why should we make a fuss in order to accommodate these folks? What are they bringing? Except challenges and you know, just all kinds of undesirable things. I'm hearing even people on the commentators talking about disease. They're going to be bringing diseases with them. They're bringing sub-intelligence with them. These are not accomplished citizens in their own country. What is the fuss? Load them back up on the buses and get them back home and be done with it. Well, except, of course, the United States, at least theoretically being a member of the World Community of Nations, has a thing called international law to observe here. You know, the same kind of law that we compel other nations to observe when mass migrations are occurring in their country or in their region. That's when the United States is quick to invoke the rule of law. And the United Nations is involved. And the United Nations charters are quoted, the provisions of which are meant to secure the rights of people who are suffering like this. But if you put it within immigration law, you take this problem out of the international arena, and then you arrogate to yourself 100% authority and responsibility for solving this problem. You don't need anybody else coming to supervise here. You don't need anybody else's input. You can take charge of this. So you transform what would normally be an international problem into something that you decide that you will manage yourself 100%. It's happening on American soil, and damn it, we Americans will solve our American problems. We don't need the United Nations here. We don't need to talk about international charters and conventions and human rights. We don't need any of that. We can fit this problem into a problem about human trafficking. And we will pack this elephant into that small little car, like in the circus. We will amaze even ourselves at how ingenious we can be at completely transforming an international problem into something that we can dispatch 1, 2, 3, as long as, of course, we have $3.7 billion for essentially several jobs programs. And that's how this is being managed. The sentiment is these are not the kinds of, quote, immigrants that America needs. These are perfectly dispensable people. We will lose nothing by getting rid of them. And so we will engineer the solution within the context of American law, not international law. This way, we don't have any interference, and we can do exactly as we please. Well, there's a reason. When you wish to really solve a problem, you, of course, you it's clear how the problem is manifesting itself, but that is not the problem. This is the manifestation of the problem. When you're really interested in solving the problem, you look at a couple of things. You look at causal relationships. What is happening there in the countries where they live? What is happening there that is compelling them to want to move here? Why are they selecting the United States to move? I mean, there are all these different countries that they could go to, but uniformly, they're headed toward the United States, and they're heading toward the United States. This is not an incidental kind of decision. Why? If you're interested in solving the problem, you undertake another level of inquiry. Is there some kind of relationship between the United States and these countries? Is there some kind of relationship between the actions of the United States and the causes that are compelling these people to move from their countries? Is there some kind of involvement, some kind of relationship here? And if so, what is it? In other words, in looking at a problem, are we satisfied as a nation that we have no hand in creating it? We have no role in sustaining it. We are not in any way responsible for the problem. That is a very vital part of the solution. But you're not hearing about that, and you won't hear about that. Because the propaganda machine has to operate to feed that nativist fervor that they are engineering here. These people come from corrupt nations. Their leaderships are corrupt and inept. They are, quote, banana republics, which is a contemptuous and racist way of regarding nations, developing and emerging nations. They come from systems that are hopeless, and hopeless despite everything we are doing to make life go better for them. That is the propaganda. But when you look at the relationship of the United States to these countries, of the points of origin for these refugees, not immigrants, from Mexico, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, principally, you see instantly the causal relationship there between the United States and these countries and the crisis that has developed. The United States doesn't have clean hands here. It is not blameless in this situation. When you talk about military interventions and redesigning the economies to suit the whims of U.S. corporations, when you talk about supporting repressive regimes and arming regimes that terrorize their citizens, when you talk about the fact that these terror squads, you're training them in the United States, the School of the Americas, come and learn how to assassinate people and terrorize citizens. You're spending a lot of money backing the wrong people, because with strong man leadership in these countries, the corporations get what they want. They terrorize their citizens into submission. And where they leave off, the gangs take up. They emulate the massacres, they emulate the terrorism, they emulate the wanton attacks on helpless people that they've seen. They're mimicking the behavior they've seen. When you look at the consistent involvement of the United States, the CIA is there. You have assassinations occurring. You have U.S. deciding, well, you know, we don't like this government. We replace it and put another one in, the one that we like. And they turn their eyes against the crimes that are committed in the name of freedom, American freedom and democracy. When you investigate the role, the full role of the United States, going back for years in these countries and in the region generally, you see there are no clean hands here. And there is direct responsibility, not indirect, but direct responsibility for precipitating the very need for a mass movement of people today. That is if you're interested. If you're interested in intelligent policymaking, you come together with leaders of the region, you exercise leadership that way, and you say, okay, it's time for a new approach. Let's put our heads together as leaders of nations of the region, and let's decide how best to proceed. And you take yourself into the community of nations, and you behave even as you lead, but you behave like you're interested in a holistic approach to a problem. But that's not what the United States is interested in. So it won't be doing that. You read, and your heart sinks when you read about what the presidents, including President Obama, siding with the wrong leadership, encouraging atrocities that are unspeakable, hundreds of thousands of people slaughtered in service of American domination and supremacy in the hemisphere, and the so-called realignment of the ideological realignment in the name of, well, we must punish those countries that are too close to Russia and China and not close enough to us. This kind of primitive thinking is what has informed U.S. foreign policy for all these years. And don't think that there's no relationship between what we're seeing, these waves of people pouring through the borders, and a history of decades, in some cases even a century, in the case of Texas, I mean, in the case of Mexico, which, of course, is where Texas is now, and five other states. So you see that there is a relationship. So to pretend that there is no relationship is to engage in revisionism and the worst kind of leadership. We need a different kind of approach now, a different kind of leadership informed by different imperatives for regional solutions. To turn the leaf, the horrible history of the United States involvement, military involvement, repressive and terroristic involvement in these countries and in the region. But of course, this is political season. And in political season, everything gets reduced to the lowest common denominator, to its most simplistic form, because they all are agreeing on what the discussion ought to be. Nobody is taking the discussion outside of how do we deliver, you know, soap and water to these folks while we listen to them gently and gently escort them to the buses and the airplanes and get them out of here. But make no mistake, a huge part of it, I refer to it as nativism, but it goes beyond that. This issue, this crisis is occurring within a consciousness in the United States about the year 2043. The crisis that is occurring is that by 2043, according to the Bureau of the Census, the nation will have turned definitively away from its established demographic order. And that is, it will be the first time in the United States that we will have a majority-minority population. Whites will become a numerical minority by 2043. In fact, in some cases, it's not waiting for it to happen. There are 14 states that have already tipped that racial scale. And at least 10% of all of the counties of the United States have already gone in that direction. So 2043 may be even earlier than 2043 that we will see this seismic shift in the demographics of the United States. And of the majority-minority population projected to be in control, to be in the numerical advantage by that point, Latinos will be the dominant ethnic group. Do you really believe that anybody in Congress is interested in aiding and abetting that process? This is going to be traumatic enough as it is for people to grasp that reality, that this is where the country is headed and they can do nothing about it. Do you really believe that there is a sincere desire to aid and abet and be a catalyst for that change? It's not going to happen. So where does that leave us? For one thing, we got to get real clear about how, in so many ways, we have to be so vigilant about the ways in which our minds, they seek to distort reality in order to control our minds. Something that we are clearly seeing, they're telling us this is an immigration problem. Everybody is agreeing it's an immigration problem. And so there's unanimity here of the desire to distort our reality, to play mind games in the sake of, for political expediency. They're all agreeing. All the people you think would disagree, they're all agreeing that this is what the situation is. They're all agreeing that there is, you know, one way to go. The only thing that they're disagreeing about is how much money you want to throw at it. $3.7 billion? No, it's not going to happen. But they all there's no essential disagreement here between Republicans and Democrats, between the president and Congress. There's no major point of departure among them here. So, you know, a matter of money. But they're all in lockstep with the idea that the last thing that the United States needs to do right now is be brilliant at foreign policy and utilize this opportunity to reconfigure our thinking, especially in light of what the future holds, to take a different path and to bring the country into full realization of its true potential to make change, not only for Americans, but for the region and even possibly for the rest of the world. There's a new direction that is demanded, but they have no answers. They're out of answers. They're out of the ability to creatively tackle a vexing problem and tackle it with intelligence and ingenuity. They're giving us the same old, and it is not enough. This is another reason that people need to examine their own relationship with the political apparatus. Because all of this is being done in our name. And there we will show up at the polls and we will vote. And we will vote to continue the same stupid cycle. And we will have fulfilled our roles as the automatons, the people who are not thinking, used as pawns in a very elaborate scheme devised by people with hidden interests, people who clearly are not qualified to lead this country or anybody else in a path of, you know, a new direction, greater progress, better thinking, out of this history of primitive thinking and action. And for these reasons, there will be no real solution to the so-called border problem, the border crisis, anytime soon. I would like to hear your thoughts. I thought I would present my thoughts today on this. to encourage you to rethink some of these things that, you know, every time we the media playing such an insidious role of telling us what our reality is, and we know it is different. We're looking at it, and they're telling us that's what we are seeing, we're not seeing. You are seeing what we tell you to see. And they predict our behavior and demand that we behave in a particular way to support just insupportable policies. The time has come for us to really reexamine our roles as activist citizens and say this is not something that we can tolerate. And there ought to be a better way. But most importantly, we cannot continue to ally ourselves with a system that consistently does these things. We will have to support other ways of doing things that are more in line with our way of thinking, more in line with a more progressive way of seeing the world, more in line with our essential beliefs of fairness and humanitarianism. And this political trick, these political acts of deception won't do. Thank you so much for being with me today. Coming up next, you want to keep it right here, is The Infectious Myth with David Crowe. I really do enjoy hearing from you, and I take what you say quite seriously. So drop me a note at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. It is really very important to me to hear from you. And I hope that this began a rethinking today of this crisis. And of course, I'm pretty sure that we will follow up on Friday when we have Free Your Mind Fridays. It will be part of the discussion then as well. I also want to encourage you to help me promote this program and PRN as a wonderful alternative to the nonsense out there. I need your help. Tell people that you know where you turn to for information. Help me popularize Lead Stories and get people listening. It would be a great, great help if you pass the word along to build the audience. I believe that we have to be very aggressive about that and become more and more a vital reference point for people looking for alternative information. And this is the way we can do it. So I ask you to join me in that effort. I also want you to think about ways in which you use this information in your ongoing day-to-day activities. Maybe you would talk to people about these things and encourage them to just consider. I mean, imagine what a difference it would be to tell people the difference between immigration and mass migration. That's a huge piece of education right there. And it refocuses people's attention. Don't go for this okey-doke where people are conditioned by the media, and the media's role really is to aid and abet the intentional dumbing down of the citizens and to go along with the program. No, we ought to be serving a different role. And that is why PRN, and that's what I try to do with this program, to continue to stimulate recognition of alternative ways of thinking about things. And when you think about things differently, you become the worst nightmare for a system because you are impervious to all of their elaborate plans to control your brain. When your brain is controlled, you are utterly controlled. So thanks so much for allowing me the time today to stretch out and present these thoughts to you. It's a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow.
Tell me about your success. Know your recipes for my
shining as it's always been.